org. Republican lawmakers in Wisconsin are targeting the award-winning Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. With little discussion and no public debate, a provision to evict the center from its home at the University of Wisconsin School of Journalism was discreetly slipped into the state budget earlier this month. Dozens of journalism outlets from across the country are calling on Wisconsin lawmakers to take back the surprise eviction notice. The final budget could go to Governor Scott Walker's desk by the end of the week. FSRN's Dylan Brogan reports from Madison.
The Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism was launched in 2009 with the mission of protecting the vulnerable, exposing wrongdoing, and seeking solutions to problems. But action taken by the Wisconsin legislature this month could threaten that mission.
It was done in secret. It was done essentially in the middle of the night. It's done without accountability, and there's a tremendous indignation at how this was handled.
Bill Leaders is the money and politics director for the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism.
Personally, as someone who works at the center, I'm saddened by this. We didn't see it coming. We don't think it's deserved. And it is predicated on, at best, misunderstanding, and at worst, some very unsavory motives.
The Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism is a nonprofit, privately funded investigative news outlet that occupies two offices in the University of Wisconsin School of Journalism. In exchange for using those offices rent-free, the center offers 5 paid internships exclusively to journalism students studying at the university. And the small investigative reporting team at the center also helps out with classes and supports the academic staff at the J School. Professor Greg Downey is the director of the School of Journalism at the University of Wisconsin.
This is a model that the big foundations and funders that are interested in helping journalism schools around the country are very excited about. They call it the teaching hospital model, right? So you actually have working journalists together with the academics. So the research, teaching, and service is integrated, and we all learn from each other.
Downey says he was flabbergasted when he first heard the legislature was seeking to end the university's partnership with the Center for Investigative Journalism. Downey says the university fully stands by the center's watchdog reporting of Wisconsin state government and other investigative work done for the public interest.
And they've even watchdogged our campus and our UW system, sometimes to the chagrin, perhaps, of UW administrators, but they've demonstrated their independence, even from us.
The two-sentence provision that prohibits the Center for Investigative Journalism from occupying any campus offices also bars any university employees from working with the center, including staff at Wisconsin Public Radio and Television. The Republican co-chairs on the Budget Committee introduced the provision as part of the committee's final motion. Representative Corey Mason, a Democrat, is a minority member of the committee and voted against the motion.
This is usually where you want to look most for some bad ideas that get slipped in the middle of the night. Nobody had any idea this was coming. And interestingly, none of the Republicans would take credit for it either.
The motion passed with little discussion along party lines, 12-4. Republican Senator Glenn Grothman is also a member of the Budget Committee. He says that many members of his caucus believe that the Center for Investigative Journalism has a left-wing bias, although he won't identify any legislators by name.
It's one of those things that just surrounds us in the air.
Grothman says he first learned about the provision to boot the center off campus 4 or 5 hours before he voted on it. Grothman supports the measure, but he's also not thrilled that it was tacked on to the huge state budget bill right before it moves on to the full legislature.
I wanted to see that motion voted on later. I think it looks bad to vote on a motion at whenever we voted on it, 5:30 in the morning or something. What am I going to do, walk out of the room? I mean, that's what we were throwing. That's what the boss says. That's what I got to do. I got to vote on it at 5:30 in the morning.
The Wisconsin Assembly and Senate take up the two-year budget this week and are scheduled to have a final budget for Republican Governor Scott Walker to sign by Friday. A few of the more moderate Republicans in the state Senate have come out in support of the center, but critics of the measure aren't sure it'll be enough. Again, Bill Leaders with the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism.
We hope that the legislature will reconsider this decision and remove it from the budget. If that doesn't happen, we hope that Governor Scott Walker will veto it.
And what if the Republicans' eviction notice is included in the final state budget?
Well, they can't stop us from doing investigative journalism, and we will continue to do that, and we'll continue to do good work, I'm sure. What they can do is make it much more difficult for the center to give something back to the state of Wisconsin.
The Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism is also not ruling out legal action. Dylan Brogan, FSRN, Madison.
And that's the program for today. The newscast was produced by Catherine Kopp. Thanks for listening. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina.
Being a rad dad is not about being cool. It's not about being hip, not about trying to be in style, not a trend. A rad dad is for radical parenting, the uncomfortable kind, the difficult kind.
Parenting has never been easy. Merging your politics with your parenting decisions can be even more challenging.
You know, we don't have a choice as parents what sexual orientation our kids are. We don't have a choice on who they're attracted to, their gender. We don't have a choice in so many things, and that makes it hard and really scary and fearful as a parent that we can't protect them all the time.
On this edition, fathers and mothers on fatherhood and how it's changing. Traditional ideas about what a dad is supposed to be are slowly disappearing, but what will take their place?
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. The battles for higher wages and union rights being waged around the country by fast food workers, retail workers, Walmart warehouse workers, and port workers is part of a dynamic new low-wage worker movement in America. From New York City to St. Louis, from Milwaukee to Chicago to Detroit, and to L.A. and beyond, workers assisted by unions like SEIU, Unite Here, and UFCW are standing up for higher wages and the right to form unions. Martine Raffanon is with the St. Louis Workers Organizing Committee and the St. Louis Can't Survive on 735 campaign.
There are 36,000 fast food jobs in St. Louis. That's one part of the low-wage worker spectrum. We've got home care workers. We've got workers in retail. These workers need to change the context of these jobs, make them strong middle-class jobs. That's our work. That's our goal. This movement resonates so broadly across our community in terms of both workers and those who stand with workers in St. Louis and then across the nation. These workers are leading the charge, but this is a fight for all of us. There's a coalition of unions that are working to support this effort in Missouri, in St. Louis, and also we have a tremendous infrastructure for support of these workers through Missouri Jobs with Justice.
For the second time this month, Turkish labor unions have called a general strike to protest the harsh police actions against protesters in Istanbul's Taksim Square. Five trade union confederations began a one-day nationwide strike Monday and are also calling on workers to take to the streets to protest government actions. During the last general strike in the first week of June, this unidentified Turkish protester told Canada's Radio Labor that economic injustice for workers, as Turkey's economy expands, is helping drive these protests.
So this is sort of like a 99% issue. The growth of the economy is creating more inequality in earnings and is therefore antagonizing the people.
Construction has come to a halt in the Canadian province of Quebec. Jesse Russell reports.
With contract negotiations between the Construction Association and unions who represent the workers falling apart this weekend, the construction workers walked off the job Monday morning. The strike impacts business, residential, industrial, and municipal construction. The association is seeking more authority when it comes to requiring employees to work on Saturdays, and they also want to create a 14-hour workday. Employers are also seeking to pay less for overtime. Currently, workers receive double time, but the employers want to only pay time and a half. More than 175,000 construction workers are walking the picket lines. Both sides have accused the other of bargaining in bad faith. This is the first construction strike in the province in 30 years.
The Workers Independent News is brought to you with support from the Bank of Labor, a division of Brotherhood Bank and Trust, member FDIC, equal opportunity lender. Bank of Labor is union-owned, union-represented, and the bank of choice for unions and their members. Now you can do business with a bank that shares labor values. More info online at bankoflabor.com.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Workers Independent News is brought to you by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, IBEW, Local Union 725.
You're tuned to WFHB. 91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Chris Martin.
And I'm Shane Lauder. This is the Daily Local News for Tuesday, June 18th, 2013.
No one wants to be institutionalized if they don't have to, and certainly that is true of Ms. Steimel and many persons affected by the state's policy changes.
The ACLU of Indiana takes on a new case. More later in the show in a WFHB feature exclusive.
Also coming up in the next half hour, the ins and outs of money, our weekly segment providing economic education to keep your budget balanced and connecting you to community resources that help keep your finances flourishing. But first, these headlines.
Tonight at 6 p.m., the Monroe County Plan Commission is holding a public hearing in the Judge Nat U. Hill III meeting room of the Monroe County Courthouse, 100 West Kirkwood Avenue. Members of the Committee for Appropriate Rural Roads, or CAR, will attend to inform the Plan Commission of what they believe to be violations of environmental regulations by contractors working on the Interstate 69 construction project under the supervision of the Indiana Department of Transportation. Specifically, CAR will provide attendees with information on the negative impact of contaminated water runoff from I-69 construction draining into sinkholes that are common to the karst limestone ground formations underlying the construction right-of-way of the new interstate. Tom Tokarski is a member of CAR.
We have documented that they are not following erosion control practices for sinkholes. They have allowed runoff from the construction site to go directly into the sinkholes, and we believe that is a violation of Rule 5, IDAM's Rule 5 erosion control. And so we are going to present that evidence to the Planning Committee tonight and inform them that a lot of times what they're told in meetings and what's written down in papers is not what happens out in the field. And we are seeing violations, we have documented before, violations of erosion control in the field and passed those our complaints on to federal and state agencies who have had to follow up and monitor those sites. So we're basically going to tell the committee about the problems we're seeing in the field with the karst.
Tokarski is referring to Rule 5 of the Indiana Department of Environmental Management. IDEM is responsible for enforcing the federal regulations imposed on the project as part of the conditions governing its approval and the grant of funding towards its construction by the Federal Department of Highways.
It's an IDEM rule that says that when you're constructing a project like this, you cannot allow water from the construction site to leave the site without being filtered or somehow cleaned up in some way or going through a filter. And in this case, the water from the construction site was heavy with sediment, was allowed to go into the sinkhole and from there into the karst system and off-site. And we believe that that is a direct violation of Rule 5.
It is possible that such runoff will contaminate surface water, streams and ponds, and also nearby wells and springs through water movement through the porous karst limestone formation and possibly contaminate the larger water reservoirs that serve the region.
I'm not sure what will be decided tonight. My role, as I see it tonight, is just to inform them of what we're seeing going on in the field. What happens after that, they will have to decide tonight or at some later date. I can't control that.
Tonight's meeting of the Monroe County Plan Commission is scheduled to begin at 6 p.m. The contaminated water runoff is the third item on the meeting agenda.
The Greater Bloomington Chamber of Commerce will host their fourth annual Women Excel Bloomington Awards Luncheon on July the 9th. Kelly Brown, the Director of Marketing and Public Relations for the Chamber, said this is the fourth year for the event.
What the Women Excel Bloomington Awards
helps to do is really showcase the depth of talent that we have here in Bloomington in terms of women who have excelled in both their professional and personal lives.
Seven local women have been chosen to be honored at the luncheon for their outstanding leadership and lasting contribution to both the community and their organizations.
These seven that we have chosen, either through their professional careers, the way they have grown within their organizations or helped to move their organizations forward, has been just really an example for others.
The awardees are Lisa Fulkerson, Melanie Hart, Beth Lodge Riggle, Natalia Razar, Jean Willery Scalon, Melinda Cedar, and Alyssa Wright. Like last year, they are from different areas of the community, both business and nonprofit, within their organizations.
All seven of these women give back to the community in some form or another, either in volunteer, giving their time, talents, and energy as part of board of directors or on boards or committees. They are just wonderful examples of women leaders.
The lunch starts at 11:30 at the Liberty Ballroom in Bloomington.
The superintendent of the Monroe County Community School Corporation thinks the results of this spring's I-STEP tests should be discounted and or vacated. Judith DeMuth, MCCSC superintendent, has posted a letter on the district website to justify her call. In the letter, she relates the problems that occurred during tests to students in grades 3 through 8. The state-mandated I-STEP tests are used not only to evaluate student progress in core subjects, but also to rate individual school and teacher performance, which in turn is used to determine teacher pay, promotion, and termination. I-STEP results can be put on a school, can put a school on a path towards state takeover and closure or transfer to private sector control. The state tests are administered over the internet by a private corporation, CTB McGraw-Hill. Recently, the news media has carried reports of interruptions during the online tests all over Indiana, including our local region. Dr. DeMuth's letter provides details on the local disruptions. During the first day of testing, two-thirds of student tests were interrupted. During the second and third days, almost half of tests were interrupted. At this time, the State Department of Education suspended testing. MCCSC then split the testing process to have half the students tested in the morning and the other half during the afternoon. However, problems persisted, including extended lag time between questions, which caused students to struggle to complete the tests in the time allotted, inaccurate answer choices on the math tests, and continuing computer interruptions in almost every session they attempted. Inexperienced third grade students had their tests interrupted up to six times during one testing session. In essence, all students were affected by testing interruptions. For students, it was traumatic. Some of them had never taken an I-STEP prior to this year. Others had never taken it online. Teachers reported that students were observed racing through exams in fear that they would be knocked offline and not able to complete the test. Many students were visibly upset. Elementary principals reported that some students were crying because of the difficulties they encountered. Tests had to be rescheduled numerous times, disrupting other school activities, and students who were not sure of what to expect next had difficulty concentrating on the I-STEP. Dr. DeMuth's letter concludes by questioning the validity and reliability of the scores. Using the results will have negative short and long-term results on student performance evaluation and could result in sanctions from the state on teachers and schools for low performance derived from flawed data. According to Dr. DeMuth, the flawed results will impact school letter grades, student growth, and other high-stakes determinations. Public perception of school and district performance will be distorted, and students' attitudes towards high-stakes testing will be undermined. The district has forwarded the list of student tests that were disrupted to CTB McGraw-Hill. The company can then either concur with the district's evaluation or deny that student testing was disrupted. The lists will then be sent back to school principals. However, Dr. DeMuth doesn't believe that the 2013 I-STEP scores will ever be reliable or valid, and the entire testing session should be discounted and or vacated.
A local resident asked the Ellettsville Plan Commission on June 6th if they would consider changing the town's rules about liquor distillers. Robert Payton told the commission he is planning to open a small craft distillery in the area.
I'm interested in starting a project here. I'm looking at creating a distilled spirits plant. Distilled spirits has grown over the past 10, 15 years. More and more craft producers and small distilleries are popping up all over the United States. There are three craft producers of distilled spirits in the United States, or in state of Indiana already. I know of one that's building a distillery in Nashville, Indiana, and I'm looking to do something similar here.
Ellettsville's town code does not specifically allow distilleries, but Payton asked the commission to consider including distilleries in the town's ordinance, allowing small breweries.
Brewing for distilling is hand in hand. That's just basically what I want to kind of point out, that I think to offer or to include distilling a part of the zoning would actually make sense. It parodies the brewing concept, since everything has to be brewed and fermented before you distill. It's just a process, a one process more. Now, there is other issues as far as aging spirit on premise, and you obviously, it's a flammable liquid. I mean, so there are some issues there, but it's all, again, food grade, and we definitely want to be selling this stuff locally and around.
Payton said he wanted to locate in Ellettsville, although he said he has not found a property for the business. The commission did not respond to his request. Later in the meeting, the commission approved the revised set of rules governing the conduct of the commission members. This was the third time in recent months that the commission considered approving the rules. But in the past, members had problems with some of the rules, including one that barred members from discussing cases with interested outside meetings. Planning Director Connie Griffin said she revised the document to eliminate the controversial rules.
So as you'll notice, 3.2, contacting Plan Commission members regarding pending petitions prohibited on page 11, that was all struck. And then the other addition that I had placed was on page 12. And I believe that the purpose and authority statement sums that up nicely, so that we can go ahead and get rid of this section up here. And I was just basically stating that Plan Commission members should refrain from situations which might appear to compromise his or her independent judgment, including but not limited to situations involving ex parte communication and conflicts of interest.
Griffin replaced those sections with a more general paragraph stating, quote, "These rules shall also ensure that no member of the commission will gain a personal or financial advantage from his or her work for the commission," unquote. The commission unanimously passed revised rules. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Chris Martin.
And I'm Shane Lauder. Support for the Daily Local News comes from Smithville, a local provider of internet, phone, and TV service over a stabilized fiber optic network, serving Monroe, Greene, Owen, Lawrence, Brown, and Morgan counties. More information on Smithville's full line of services is available at 812-876-2211 or smithville.net.
Last Friday, the ACLU of Indiana filed a lawsuit against the Indiana Family and Social Services Administration, challenging the way in which the agency operates two of its Medicaid waiver programs, the Community Integration and Rehabilitation Waiver and the Aged and Disabled Waiver. WFHB correspondent Lauren Guapa speaks with attorney Gavin Rose about the suit for today's WFHB feature exclusive.
My name is Gavin Rose. I am a staff attorney with the ACLU of Indiana.
Can you explain kind of simply what the change in policy is that is triggering the lawsuit?
The Family and Social Services Administration operates a series of what are known as home and community-based Medicaid waiver programs. What these are programs authorized by the federal government that allow for services to be provided to individuals in their home or in another community setting when those individuals would otherwise require institutionalization of some sort in a nursing home, for instance. The two largest waiver programs that the state operates are the ones that Ms. Steimel, the plaintiff in this case, has really caught herself in between. One of them is known as the CIH waiver. This is a waiver designed for developmentally disabled persons. It has, for years and years, had a wait list that in some instances was a decade or longer
in length. Last fall, the agency just did away with that wait list entirely and decided that persons who were on that wait list could only get a waiver slot if they met certain quote-unquote priority criteria. Another waiver program that the state operates is known as the Aged and Disabled, the A&D waiver. Due to a recent change in policy, the state has determined that persons with developmental disabilities may no longer receive services through that waiver program unless they also have skilled medical needs, which are ventilation, suctioning, medication injections, something that you require a nurse for. Ms. Steimel, all of a sudden, has first been kicked off the waiting list for the CIH waiver so that she may never receive services through that, and she has been receiving services for 8 years or so through the A&D waiver. She has recently been told that she can no longer receive that either. What she has been offered instead is a place on a very, very small waiver program offered by the state, which, quite frankly, does not provide services that come remotely close to those necessary to ensure that she is safe and secure.
So the last thing you were saying was that was a cut from 160 to 40 hours a month of care, right?
Yes, and in the very near future, her services will be reduced almost exactly fourfold. And for someone like Ms. Steimel, who she has cerebral palsy, and as a result of that, who she requires assistance in literally everything. She is wheelchair bound. She needs an assistant to help her transfer from her bed to her wheelchair. She needs assistance staying, meal preparation, certainly running errands or transporting her to work. For someone in that situation, and there are more than a few of those people on Indiana's waiver programs, reducing her from 40 hours a week to 10 hours a week is reducing her to very, very dangerous levels and requiring her to think seriously for the first time in her life about institutionalization.
Is there no waiver in existence now that is for any more than 40 hours a week of just regular care like she's getting now, not registered nurse care?
There's none for which she has been deemed eligible for the state. One of the things we are asking, and the thing we are asking most immediately, is for the federal court to order the state to allow her to keep her spot on the A&D waiver, at least during the pendency of the case, while that gets worked out. But the answer to the question is no. There are no services being offered her that will let her remain in the community if we don't get some immediate action from either the state or the court.
One thing that I noticed about this case is that a 10-year wait list to get these things was already extremely problematic, but now the ACLU is suing to get the wait list back, correct?
Sure, and there's always a problem with a lengthy wait list. Certainly, it appears that Indiana's was lengthier than many out there. The problems with the wait list have been ameliorated to some extent by the fact that individuals have been offered this interim placement on another waiver program. Ms. Steimel has been allowed to receive services on the A&D waiver while she waited for her number to come up on the other waiver where she was on the wait list. So certainly there are problems with the lengthy wait list, but until recently, at least for some persons, that the state was working with them to make sure they receive services even while on the wait list.
What is the value to our community to, keep people like Carla Steimel from being institutionalized?
I think it's incredibly important. Ms. Steimel works at a local nonprofit in Knox County. She's 27. This isn't a person who is ready to or should be in a nursing home for the rest of her life. And for that reason, Congress and the Department of Justice have mandated through the Americans with Disabilities Act that states take a proactive role in ensuring that
individuals who would otherwise require institutionalization are afforded an opportunity to live a fulfilling life in the community. No one wants to be institutionalized if they don't have to, and certainly that is true of Ms. Steimel and many persons affected by the state's policy changes.
My last question is, it said in the press release that making the waitlist move at a reasonable pace is one of the goals of the case, but
sure. How
is the suit going to specifically address that?
You know, we're going to have to see about that as we go along. In a landmark decision from 15 years ago, the United States Supreme Court said that programs such as this don't violate the ADA. The states are allowed to have wait lists for programs, provided that they do move at a reasonable pace. That's something that the U.S. Supreme Court has anticipated. Does 12 to 15 years fit within that? I just don't know, and we're going to have to address that issue as we go along in the case.
Yeah, see, I thought 10 to 15 years already would be an unconstitutional wait list. I'm surprised that that didn't get challenged before, you know?
Sure. No, I've understand wholeheartedly. Like any attorney, we can litigate on behalf of the persons that walk in our door. But yeah, it was not a good place for anyone to be.
That was correspondent Lauren Glapa speaking with attorney Gavin Rose regarding the ACLU of Indiana's lawsuit against the Indiana Family and Social Services Administration.
Support for the Daily Local News comes from Blooming Foods Market and Deli, your locally grown co-op grocer since 1976. Blooming Foods features natural, organic, local, and fair trade food and garden items with support for small farmers, co-op producers, and local food artisans. Blooming Foods Market and Deli on East 3rd near College Mall, West 6th near the Courthouse Square, and right up your alley at Kirkwood and Dunn.
Next, WFHB's weekly financial segment, The Ins and Outs of Money.
Welcome to The Ins and Outs of Money, connecting you with community resources that help you keep your budget balanced and your finances flourishing. Now, as we've discussed before on The Ins and Outs of Money, a big part of being financially literate is understanding how to plan. Now, let's do a quick review. Budgets, arguably the cornerstone of understanding your money and where it goes, are, of course, plans. And these plans should account for not only known expenses, but also unknown ones, which is where a savings account can come in handy. Having money for unplanned events should be part of your plan. Now, I want to talk about gas prices today. When gas prices spike, people get nervous because whether they actually have written it into their budget or not, it can affect their financial plans, sometimes seriously. Not only does it cost more to drive your vehicle, but other things which depend on gas prices, like food, for example, or air transportation, they get more expensive too. The fact that this affects nearly every American is, of course, why gas prices become such a political tool in, say, an election year. Although it's unclear that the president or the government can really have any control at all over a market that sets its own prices, most Americans, according to a recent Associated Press article, think they should at least try to do something about it. But if it's true that our politicians really can't do anything about it, it's really up to individuals to figure out how to deal with the reality of higher prices themselves. European countries live with much higher gas prices than we do. Turkey's cost for a gallon of gas right now is approximately $10.40, and Denmark isn't far behind with $9.80 a gallon. How have they dealt with high gas prices for all of these years? Well, in a whole litany of ways. Fuel-efficient and often diesel cars and scooters come to mind, but so does public transportation, biking and walking. Europe arguably has a stronger infrastructure for public transportation, but let's explore the money-saving options that are available to us here. If you have to have a car, dumping your V8 or V6 for a four-cylinder at least, or a hybrid, electric, or any of the newer, cleaner models at best, will drastically improve your chances to keep more money in your wallet. Getting 35 miles per gallon versus 20 miles per gallon is a huge price difference. If you have a 14-gallon tank, for example, you could make it to Chicago and back on one tank of gas, costing you around $55 with today's prices. With a 20-mile-per-gallon vehicle, you'd just make it to Chicago, you'd have to fill up again, and you'd return home only with a half tank of gas, costing you almost $100. When you're budgeting transportation expenses, bear this in mind. You'll pay a lot more for a car than you think over the life of the vehicle if it's not fuel efficient. According to AAA's 2011 report called Your Driving Costs, the cost of operating a sedan for 1 year is approximately $7,600. And according to 2004 data from AAA estimates and U.S. Census surveys, ownership of one motor vehicle accounts for more than 18% of a typical household's income. Those numbers, of course, reflect average gas prices that were below $3 a gallon. Think about what it would be today. So let's talk about bikes. The cost of operating a bicycle for a year is only $120, according to the League of American Bicyclists. That includes the cost of purchase and maintenance. And science tells us that the figurative miles per gallon of riding a bike comes out to the equivalent of 730 miles per gallon. That's a huge savings over 35 miles per gallon, right? Walking gets you a lower miles per gallon equivalent, 360, but that still is much better than 35. And even though buses tend to get 6 miles per gallon, with hybrid buses doing a bit better, you multiply that number by the amount of folks on a bus. If there are, say, 60 students at 8 in the morning riding the number 4, that bus is getting 240 miles per gallon. Buses do cost you every time you get on, but think about that in terms of how much money you're saving in fuel costs. Families do fit in smaller cars. Carpooling is, of course, an option. Multiply your miles per gallon by the amount of people in the car, and there's your fuel savings. Information about alternative transportation is all over the internet, at your public library, and at places like your community bike project. Here in Bloomington, we have the Bloomington Community Bike Project. Check it out at bloomingtonbikeproject.com. The ins and outs of money has been brought to you by the Monroe County Public Library's It's Your Money Project and produced for Community Radio WFHB. Executive producer is Allison Bechtesh. It's Your Money is made possible by a grant from the FINRA Investor Education Foundation through Smart Investing at Your Library, a partnership with the American Library Association.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB, supported by Smithville, your Indiana communications company at smithville.net, and by Blooming Foods Market and Deli, your locally grown co-op grocer. Today's headlines were written by David Murphy and Yvonne Chang, along with Joe Crawford for Cats Week, in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Today's feature was produced by Sarah Hetrick with correspondent Lauren Glapa. The Ins and Outs of Money is produced by Jason Evans Groth. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Our executive producer is Allison Bechtesh. For WFHB, I'm Chris Martin.
And I'm Shane Lauder. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program. Stay tuned for Interchange, Bloomington Community Radio's longest-running public affairs program, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Executive producer is Chad Carruthers.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.
This is listener-supported WFHB, Bloomington, Bedford, Ellettsville, Nashville, community radio for South Central Indiana, online at wfhb.org. It's 6:03, current weather conditions, 74 degrees and fair outside. Tonight, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms before midnight, partly cloudy with a low around 61. Wednesday, sunny with a high near 82. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy with a low around 58 degrees. On Thursday, sunny with a high near 85, a low around 63. Stay tuned for Interchange.
Community Radio.
It's about real people.
Not sound bites.
Not more talking heads.
Not on this show.
Interchange is a community access media forum fostering unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Conversations that challenge the ways we perceive the world around us.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Hello and welcome to Interchange. I am Lewis Malone and I am here with Chancellor of Western Governors University, Indiana, Allison Barber. Allison has done a variety of things throughout her career, and she actually does hold a degree from Indiana University. And so we will be getting a little bit more in-depth with her on the In the second segment, where we talk about a little bit about her, and then we get talk a little bit more about Western Governors. But we're going to open up just talking about a university that many people out there may not have heard of, but one that's doing a sounds like a great service here in our state, Western Governors University. There's a big one, Western Governors, like the umbrella organization, and then there's the one specific to Indiana. Allison, welcome. Let's talk about Western Governors a little bit.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show tonight. You know, I'm thrilled to talk about WGU Indiana because we are the state's online nonprofit university really focused on busy adults. Independent achievers, people that either started college and maybe didn't complete because they got good jobs, or maybe they got married and had children. So people that want to finish that bachelor's degree, or Lewis, people who are looking to earn a master's degree. Our entire focus is on busy working adults who want to go further in education.
That does sound like something that's very important. I mean, here in Bloomington, Indiana, we have a very vibrant, large flagship university, but the way it's formatted might not be the best for people that have another job or another life that they have to live apart from going to school.
Sure. What we know to be true is, you know, in our state, 740,000 people in our state started college but didn't finish. We also know that over half of the jobs coming to Indiana will require, by 2018, will require a bachelor's degree or master's degree, some type of accelerated education. Lewis, what we know is that there's space for all of the universities in our state, and boy, we have great universities in Indiana. Mm-hmm. But there's a need with the workforce in the adult population. There is a need for access to affordable and flexible education that wasn't really available until WGU Indiana was established 3 years ago.
Okay. So how it was established 3 years ago, established in June of 2010 by the then governor, Mitch Daniels.
Yeah.
And so since then, it's really had rapid growth mm-hmm. here locally. So where I believe Indiana right now, Western Governors University is also an online university that, as the name suggests, started out west mm-hmm. in Salt Lake City, I believe. Mm-hmm. But here in Indiana, it's expanded so rapidly that we're only behind a few states in terms of enrollment of right. students.
Right. So Western Governors University, the online university for the country, started 16 years ago. There are students in all 50 states. Here in Indiana, 3 years ago, Governor Daniels established WGU, or Western Governors University, Indiana, and really declared it the state's online university. The difference is that our students have access to state aid, so federal aid and state aid. Governor Daniels and now Governor Pence and really every politician we meet with, to include your mayor today, mm-hmm. understands that this is the time to provide adults with an option. You know, our tuition is $6,000 a year, flat rate. Adults need that type of option. And so you're right. When we launched WGU Indiana 3 years ago, we had about 260 students. Now we have 3,300 students enrolled. So in the first 2 years, we saw a growth of 1,400%
wow.
growth.
Wow.
And that speaks to the need.
So the need, and it's something that when we look at the statistics for the state of Indiana, I think the most recent ones I had a few years back, and we're near the middle of the pack in terms of adults, the percentage of adults with a university degree. I'm not sure that might be accurate or inaccurate. I believe we're near the middle of the pack there. And so we have these jobs coming in, as you stated. So what kind of schools, what kind of colleges, we think of a university, all the various colleges, are specifically at WGU Indiana to help people get those jobs?
We have four colleges within our university. We offer about 52 degrees. So our focus really for our college, we have a business, IT, health profession, and education. We offer bachelor's and master's. Our MBA program is already the fifth largest in the state of Indiana. The four colleges that we offer really speak to the need and the opportunity for jobs in our state. And that's how we develop our curriculum, really, is to say where are the needs of in the workforce and what degrees are required for people to compete for those jobs. That's how we establish our university colleges.
Your colleges, okay. How did this come to be? We mentioned in 2010, Mitch Daniels decided to start. Was that something out of the blue? Was that something that WGU, because it had been existed previously in other states, was looking for states to try to start a university in their, to establish their own university in a local state?
Well, Indiana's really been part of Western Governors University since it was first created. Governor O'Bannon actually gave money to help create Western Governors University 16 years ago. 3 years ago, Governor Daniels was invited to be on the board of Western Governors University. And when he went on the board, he recognized this really unique model that's, first of all, focused on adults. Mm-hmm. Our average age student's 37. It's affordable, right? It's flexible because it's all online. And Governor Daniels looked at that and said, boy, the state of Indiana, we are number 42 in the country of people with college
42,
degrees.
42.
So
not near the middle at all. We are way down.
And why, that's important. We look at that at WGU Indiana and we say, boy, that's important for individuals to be able to take care of their families, to succeed in career opportunities. And then at the next level up, we look at it from economic development for our cities and towns and for our state, that if we don't have an educated workforce, we won't attract new companies to our state. And so really all of these things are tied together. But first and foremost, we care about the individual. And individuals who go further in education stand a better chance at long-term job security and career advancement. It's tied to education in every research project you see, in every survey. That's what matters, is education.
Education, education, education. So you said at the beginning that there were 19 governors.
I think
it's 18 governors from states.
Yeah.
And then the governor of Guam.
Yes.
All contributed, the states contributed.
That's right.
$100,000.
That's right.
Does that sound correct? Okay.
That's the last time the states invested money. So, for instance, WGU Indiana, we don't take any money from the state. All of the governors invested startup money 16 years ago. But since then, we are self-sustained on student tuition, and we haven't raised tuition in 3 years.
Well, that is incredible when you think about the tuition being raised around the country, pricing people out. You see even out west, students protesting the idea that their tuition is rising and fees are rising along with that. And apart from that, not only are you self-sustaining on tuition, but you're a private nonprofit university.
That's right.
So in as opposed to some other perhaps online universities, there's not the profit motive there.
That's right. Our model is really a value add to the state. How can we help the state, individuals of each state, succeed through education, have career advancement, and then help the state really prosper through economic development by an educated workforce? And so that's correct. We are a nonprofit. We take no money from the state, and we don't answer to shareholders. We answer to our students.
So are you a private entity or are you a public entity?
Okay. We're private.
So you're a private entity that has been endorsed by
That's
the state
right.
of Indiana.
Which means our students can receive state aid in addition to the federal aid.
Okay. So does that put you at, just a quick question, at loggerheads occasionally with community colleges? How are they feeling about Western Governor University being in the state at this time?
We have a really terrific partnership with our community college.
Excellent, excellent.
And that's, we actually, Ivy Tech graduates receive a 5% tuition discount at WGU Indiana mm-hmm. because we want people to get their associate's degree to go further and get their bachelor's and then their master's.
Okay.
So we don't offer associate's degrees. We offer bachelor's and master's degrees, which gives us a really wonderful way to collaborate with all of the community colleges.
Absolutely, because we have, again, and not to insult anybody here locally, but we do have, of course, IU, but of course, Ivy Tech as well, which is a really, really great community college that we have locally, and then they have branches throughout the state as well. So it's great that you've been able to come in locally, just still very young, very, very young school and since 2010, and begin building bridges with the other educational service providers here in the community.
It's good for citizens to have options. And when it comes to education, you want people to be able to choose what suits them. And so some people like brick and mortar. Some people want a campus environment. Mm-hmm. My students happen to be people that want the flexibility and the affordability and the ability really to accelerate. So, you know, our students graduate in 2 years with a bachelor's or a master's degree because you go at your pace if you choose to accelerate. And that suits, well, it suits 89 people right here in your own county that have already enrolled and several have graduated.
So if we are looking at this perhaps accelerated rate mm-hmm. going through things, how do you, and we'll talk about what I believe is called competency-based right. degrees here in a little bit, but how do you ensure when people come in they have the basic skills that they need to attend Western Governors University?
Well, everyone who comes into WGU Indiana has some college experience, mm-hmm. and so they've proven themselves at that level. The second thing is we're competency-based. So when you come to WGU Indiana, you're going to take those first classes and you will identify whether or not you've got what it takes to continue, and that's what we work really hard. Every student's partnered with a faculty member full-time. We don't hire adjuncts. So those faculty members really help you succeed in your pursuit of a degree, and our average age student's 37. And so it's a really different conversation when people enroll in WGU Indiana as opposed to an 18-year-old who's enrolling in right out of high school.
Absolutely. And so you had just mentioned in passing that everybody that has gone to WGU Indiana has been to college previously. Is that a requirement or is that something that just happens to be?
We recommend it. So 1% of our student body has not had college experience. So maybe they have job experience that it would lend themselves. So 1% is a pretty small percentage, right? So because what we know is online education is not easy, and it's really important for people to demonstrate that they are comfortable in the college environment with college-level work before they move into an online environment. Oh, our students have done really well. We're really proud of them because they take the challenge. They realize that it's their best option for success. And we have a lot of young professionals that, you know, I think it just suits, if you think about the 20-year-olds and the 30-year-olds, they're really used to technology working for them. Mm-hmm. We had lunch today with some young professionals here in town who are students getting their master's with us, and they are thrilled that finally a university has created a model that works for them instead of telling them they have to fit in our model. We fit into their model.
Absolutely. So what is the admissions process? Do you have to take a placement exam? Do you need to have your SAT scores ready and handy? How would you start the process of going to WGU?
So, Lewis, we enroll students every month because that's best for adults. And when somebody wants to enroll in WGU Indiana, they present their transcripts, and then also they will take an exam. It's at the high school level of math and English, and it's not really a placement exam as much mm-hmm. as it is an exam to say, hey, we're ready for college work and we're ready to go. So people do take that exam when they enroll in WGU Indiana.
Okay.
But our goal is if you get your transcripts in and you take that exam and you talk to an enrollment counselor, typically we have you enrolled within 4 weeks because we want people to be aggressive in their pursuit of a degree, because it's the best thing for them.
That's a very quick turnaround.
It is a very quick turnaround.
To think about it, to get in touch, and then within 4 weeks to be enrolled mm-hmm. and starting your classes largely online.
Right. All online.
All online.
It's all online. And so, except for student teachers, they, of course, they'll
they have
do their
to do a little practical work there.
That's right. So if somebody is ready to enroll and they have all their paperwork together, they're enrolled in 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay. We mentioned the colleges a little bit. You have the college, the education.
Yes.
Business, information technology. Right. And did you have nursing? Health profession.
Yeah, to include nursing.
To include nursing. And those are all accredited.
Everything's accredited.
Everything's accredited. That should be.
Yes, thank you for asking.
Be noted.
Yes, it's noted. Very important. You know, not every school is. And students need to ask that question before they enroll anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to be moving into a break here just in a little bit. We do want to talk about, is there any plan to expand the number of colleges that are offered at the university?
We constantly survey the workforce to see what types of degrees are needed for people to pursue, and we will change and adapt our curriculum and our offerings every year. And so we might add a new bachelor's degree or a new master's degree in accounting or a master's degree in leadership, because this is what the workforce is asking for. We don't expect to change our four colleges,
okay.
And we don't ever expect to offer PhDs.
Okay.
Because we know the workforce is right in the, we're in the sweet spot for helping people compete for the jobs that are coming to our state are here.
All right, excellent. Well, you're listening to Interchange. I want to thank Alice and Barbara for being with us. She'll be with us for the hour. And I am Lewis Malone. We're going to take a quick break. Coming back, we'll get to know the chancellor a little bit better, and we will start talking about the mission of Western Governors University and how that really informs the work that you do. Again, this is Interchange on WFHB. We will be right back.
Support for WFHB comes from Karen Pitkin, a real estate broker bringing knowledge, experience, and individualized services to buyers and sellers. You may contact the Pitkin team at RE/MAX Realty Professionals 322-9200 or at sellbloomington.com.
Hello, this is Interchange here on WFHB. I am Lewis Malone, your host for this evening, and I am here with the Chancellor of Western Governors University, WGU Indiana, Allison Barber. So we were just talking about what Western Governors University has to offer. What is this school? Where did it come from? All these things. But we could probably ask the same thing of you a little bit, Allison. Who are you? Where did you come from? What have you done here? So I know that you had a bachelor's degree in elementary education. You have your master's in education from Indiana University.
Yes.
You went to the Northwest campus.
Did.
Is that what you said? And that you've had a wide variety of roles that you've had in your professional life, from being president of your own company that you started in communications. You were an adjunct professor at a major university on the East Coast, Georgetown, and you were previously Assistant Secretary of Defense for Internal Communications at the Department of Defense, obviously.
Right.
So how does all of this, welcome again, and how
Thank
does
you.
All of this affect the work that you do now at the Western Governors University?
Well, you know, Lewis, I started off as an elementary school teacher in Merrillville, Indiana, so education's really been my passion.
Mm-hmm.
I taught first grade, second grade, and then sixth grade. And when I was teaching sixth grade, I kept thinking to myself, I wonder what else there is out there, you know. And after I got my master's, I thought, I'd like to explore a few more things. My husband decided he really had a passion to join the military, so he joined the Army, and we both quit our jobs, and that's the only reason we left Indiana was for him to serve the country, and that was a really great experience. We landed in D.C., and you're right, it was there where I worked in nonprofits, and then I worked in the federal government, and worked at an ad agency and a marketing firm, and had my own PR business, and so I just am always curious and fascinated by new opportunities. And when we decided to move back home to Indiana, and the governor said that he was going to launch WGU Indiana and that it needed a chancellor, it was really an honor to be selected for that job. And I thought, you know, maybe I could, you know, put together this career that's been pretty eclectic and put the energies of the different things I've learned, a love of education, experience in marketing, and PR and communication, and then just really a heart for people that I think I developed when I worked at the American Red Cross in D.C., of just saying, you know, so there are so many wonderful Americans, and almost to a person, they have this desire to accelerate and achieve, to take care of their family. You know, there are some really special qualities, I think, about Americans that are consistent no matter where you live, no matter what your income is. And really, even no matter what your education background is, it's this desire to do well and to provide. And so I think I probably developed that passion maybe when I worked at the Red Cross. And boy, it's just been something that has come to life again at WGU Indiana, because as I travel the state and I get that opportunity and love it, I meet people from all walks of life. You know, I meet the people that we talked about that live right here in Bloomington getting their MBA with us, and people that have found themselves on the wrong side of a downsize at a company and need education to get that next shot. And so I think what I've had the opportunity to do is what so many people in Indiana have done, is just try a lot of things and work hard to try and maybe give people a shot at something that they deserve.
That sounds great. I also want to think, we talked a lot about the students, and I think it's clear that that's the focus of the university, and you as the chancellor are communicating that out to everybody. I also want to pick your brain as a business owner, as a previous business owner, as someone who's hired. What values do you see in the people or in the Western Governors University, the education that provides for business owners to look at that and see that degree and say, okay, what does this mean? You know, what does it mean? Sometimes there are some degrees that say, oh, this person's done this or this person's done this. What does WGU communicate?
I think it communicates several things. First of all, it communicates a graduate of WGU Indiana is a self-disciplined person. They are motivated to achieve. They have, they can definitely multitask. You know, when you think about 70% of our students work full-time and they're going to school, and remember that WGU Indiana is, you go to school full-time. You don't just take a class a semester. You're taking 12 credits every 6 months. So, so our graduates demonstrate a lot of commitment and resolve and focus and discipline. And our employers who hire our graduates, you know, we surveyed our employers, 99% said they'd hire more of our graduates because they hit the job, they hit the ground running, and because they demonstrate these qualities that are so important in the workplace.
And that it probably speaks also to the fact that so many of your students were working previously.
That's right.
So once they get that piece of paper, once they get that degree that says, okay, now I have this knowledge as well, they're accustomed to working.
That's
and
right.
So when they were to be hired, then all of a sudden, this is someone that's used to working. They're used to working hard, and having one job is a whole lot easier than having a job and going to school full time. So they got energy to spare.
That's right. That's exactly right.
I want to talk a little bit. We have WGU's mission statement here. This might not be the mission statement specifically for the one from Indiana. I don't know if you have a separate one. It's the same. Okay. So the principal mission of Western Governors University is to improve quality and expand access to post-secondary educational opportunities by providing a means for individuals to learn independent of time and place and to earn competency-based degrees and other credentials that are credible to both academic institutions and employers. Sounds pretty standard for a mission statement for a university that you've been speaking about, and one that is specific for people coming returning to school. Mm-hmm. I do want to ask about the term competency-based degrees.
Sure.
What is that as opposed to, I mean, aren't all degrees competency-based, or is that, what do you mean when you say that?
Yeah, so competency-based education is relatively new. WGU is one of the really pioneers in this space. So if you think about, let's just talk about the adults because that's who I care about and who we focus on. Okay. But adults come to higher ed, they know different things and they learn at different rates based on their work experience. Our model says when you come to WGU Indiana, we're not gonna measure how long you sit in the classroom. We're gonna measure your learning. So, Lewis, if you came to our university and the work you've been doing, and maybe you're going to get a degree in human resource, another degree for you, and a lot of our students do pursue additional degrees. If you're going to get a degree in human resources, there may be a course that you really have a lot of competencies in that space because you've been working in that field in some level. So when you enroll in WGU Indiana, your faculty member is going to talk to you on the phone and says, gosh, Lewis, what's your background? I bet this course you have several competencies. Let's work through that. Mm-hmm. You might work through that material and take that test in 2 weeks. And you will, if you're competent, you're done with that class. Yeah. Why in the world would we make you sit for an entire term in a class to take a test at the end of that term to prove that you're competent if you're competent on the second week or the second day or the fifth week?
Whatever refresher you might need or the specific information you might need, you're provided it, you're able to move on.
That's right. Adults love this about WGU Indiana because it feels like such a waste of time when you sit in a classroom and you're listening to things that you've been doing on the job for 10 years.
Okay.
So we don't measure time, we measure learning, and we don't teach you what you already know. We teach you what you don't know. Competency-based learning means that you are demonstrating you are competent in the curriculum and the learning objectives that are required to pass a course. And that's our model. That's why you might pass that. You might pass a class in human relations in 2 weeks, and then in finance, you might need 2 months. And that's okay at WGU Indiana because you go at your pace and you learn at your rate and can accelerate to a degree in 2 years.
Wow. Well, and so I have a question just based on what you had mentioned earlier, that if you have 12 credits or around 12 credits every 6 months, and you were to, let's say I were to take a course and I were, oh, wow, I know this information.
That's
I'm done in 2 weeks. Would I immediately start a new
course?
You would. Okay.
Every student's partnered with a faculty member, and adults love this too because most of my students have been in college in 15 or 20 years, right? So it's like, oh boy, here we go. This is, you know, how's this going to work? We partner you with a full-time faculty member, and they help you get through each course. They're with you from the day you start until the day you graduate. So, Lewis, let's say you finish that class in 2 weeks. Then your faculty member's like, great, let's take the next class. Mm-hmm. Great, maybe that takes a month. No problem. Let's take the next class. Our average student takes 18 credits because it's 6 months.
Okay.
And that's how people accelerate. So the minimum's 12 because we're full-time. But people typically take many more than that because of their competencies.
Okay. Well, and that makes a lot of sense. And does that, because you're focused on competency-based learning, does that influence, you had mentioned you weren't looking at other colleges or whatever else. Does that mean you're going to be specifically focused on degrees that really are that kind of technical ability? So it's kind of like human resources. You need to know these sorts of, you know, the documents or these concepts or IT. That's very competency-based. You know, can you do it or can you not? Mm-hmm. As opposed to more liberal arts sort of things?
Well, what we really focus on are degrees that lead to jobs to right now.
Okay.
And then also degrees that can legitimately be taught in an online environment.
Yeah.
So that's,
what I'm speaking
manufacturing would not be something that we would offer, or engineer. There are certain career fields that you wouldn't want done online. And no, that makes therefore, sense. We don't do them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I just wanted to be yes. clear as to what you will find and what you will not find if you were to go Western Governors University. What is the WGU Indiana website for people who might be interested in taking a look at it?
Our website's indiana.wgu.edu.
Okay.
And we'd love people to visit the website. When you go to the website, though, Lewis, this is the key piece for your listeners. There's a phone number, and we want you to call an enrollment counselor for this reason. 80% of my students transfer in credits, and we try to make it so easy for students to transfer in credits, even if they're 5 or 10 years old, if they're part of your degree plan. Great. So call an enrollment counselor to see what might work for you at WGU Indiana, because we really try to facilitate everything for that adult learner to make it really easy for them to go back to college. The coursework's not easy, but everything else should be.
Well, and that is probably very, very helpful and very under, you know, people will probably love that if they are coming back and it's been over a decade and yes. you're thinking, you know, I don't know if even though it's so important to have that degree in this day and age and to have those skills, that whole process can be intimidating.
That's right.
So,
and people should go to the WGU Indiana Facebook page and ask other students about the experience, because we find our students love to talk to other adults about how it was for them. And it's important. It's an important peer group for them as well.
Absolutely. So we are here, we're speaking with Allison Barber, the Chancellor of Western Governors University, Indiana. Do you generally call it WGU Indiana?
WGU Indiana.
Western Governors. I was wondering, I think we discussed it a little bit, Western Governors, because people don't think of Indiana as very far west most
they
of the time.
I hope not. If they do, they didn't go to fourth grade.
And so it's just an interesting name for a school that is largely based in Indiana.
So Western Governors was founded by 19 governors of the Western Governors Association and Governor O'Bannon from Indiana. And so and that's really because Governor O'Bannon had terrific vision for how technology could be leveraged to help people in many ways. And he decided to look at higher ed as one of his initiatives. So Governor O'Bannon and the other 18 governors from the Western Governors Association started this university 16 years ago, and they just named it after their association.
And just left Mr. Governor O'Bannon out in the cold.
Well,
in terms of the
name,
that's
right.
Way.
Yes. And then we came around and launched WGU Indiana, and we were the first state in the country to do that. And now several states have followed Indiana's model. Mm-hmm. So Governor O'Bannon got his feather in his cap after the fact. He started it, and we kept it going here.
Fantastic. Western Governors, WGU, as it's called, a private nonprofit university mm-hmm. that does have corporate partners. Right. Could you explain what the purpose of those corporate partners are?
Well, we know in Indiana, so many of our companies are looking to really give their employees an opportunity to go further in their education. And as the new state's online university, we thought that we were really well poised to get in with companies and say, how about if we help your employees? And there have been several companies that have been thrilled because our tuition is only $6,000 a year, and that's flat rate, and that includes your textbooks. Wow. Corporations look at that and say, boy, this is a viable option for our employees to go back to college at $6,000 a year with textbooks, all online. They never have to drive to campus. This works for our employees. We went, and so what we've done is we've created partnerships with companies like IU Health, Community Health, Defender Direct, Vectren, Honda Manufacturing, Sally May, the list goes on and on, thankfully, because these companies have said, hey, why don't we partner with WGU Indiana, and we will promote this university to our employees.
Okay.
And if you work at those companies, you can receive a 5% tuition discount if you go to WGU Indiana. So when you do the math, it's pretty amazing. $6,000 a year. Mm-hmm. If you work at those companies, you get a 5% tuition discount.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, by the way, Lewis, you're going to graduate in probably 2 years. So you're talking about $12,000 for your bachelor's degree or your master's degree from an accredited college where our employers love our graduates, right? And that's what you want to make sure is the education you're getting is worth your time and money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have students in 300 companies in Indiana mm-hmm. and employers who want more of our graduates, and we're excited about that.
And so when you speak of corporate partners, you're really looking at people who are going to bring more students and thus get more education. They aren't necessarily donating money to the university or they aren't having any influence on the university in any way?
That's right. We're self-sustained on student tuition.
Okay.
And the corporate partners really are just that of saying they're leaders in their fields. These companies are leaders, and they're saying we need to provide education to our employees that's affordable and flexible, right, within their reach. And WGU Indiana happens to be that partner, and that's why this partnership is really important for us, because they help spread the word to their employees. Mm-hmm. And since we're nonprofit, Luce, you know, we don't have the marketing budgets, you know, and oh, by the way, since we haven't raised tuition in 3 years at all, we don't have any margin, right? We don't have the cushion to do the advertising and marketing that, so we really rely on our partners, corporate partners, to help spread the word about our university.
Okay, and hopefully we'll spread the word here a little bit here today on Interchange. So Western WGU Indiana, do you want to give us that website one more time? We're going to go to break here in a second.
What's the website is indiana.wgu.edu.
Okay, and go there and then call the number.
That's right.
Go there and call the number and find out what's going on for you, whether this would be a good option if you think you might want to get another degree. But I am here. I'm Luce Malone. I'm here with Allison Barber, Chancellor of WGU Indiana. When we finish, we'll go into a break, and then here in a moment, we'll finish up the show and we'll discuss the importance of education in a modern society, online education, the many different people, not people, but companies that you can go with, universities you can go with, and then how WGU really, really focuses on adult learners. So we'll be right back here on Interchange on WFHB. Welcome back to Interchange here on WFHB. I am Luce Malone, your host for this evening. I'm here with the Chancellor of WGU Indiana, Allison Barber. I have to say, I've been practicing saying Western Governors University all day. So it's really nice for you to say, just call it WGU. That's great. I really appreciate that.
Almost sounds like a radio call letters.
WGU, exactly. Hopefully we're not getting in trouble here. So here we are. We're wrapping up our conversation, and we are want to talk about ultimately what it's all about. It's about education.
That's right.
It's about advancement in our society. And right now, that bachelor's degree, especially, the master's degree is, you know, very powerful as well, but the bachelor's degree is so important in the modern society. And Western Governors University seems to be trying to reach out to people that maybe traditionally haven't been able to get it, or perhaps they just attempted and didn't quite get there the first time.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You know, when we look at, so we can look at nationally, 37 million Americans have some college and no degree. Let's bring that down to Indiana, 740,000 people. Let's bring it down to Monroe County. I think it's one out of four people, some college, no degree. And there are good reasons for that, right? I mean, life gets in the way. We get good jobs. We get married, have kids. I mean, things we've discussed, absolutely, right? There are real reasons why people didn't complete college. But here's what we know coming out of this last recession, and we're just still digging our way out of that recession. So many of the people who lost their job, those jobs aren't coming back. Mm-hmm. And the people who lost their job at significantly higher percentage numbers were people who did not have bachelor's degrees, right? So what do we know? If you only had a high school degree, you were more prone to be laid off than if you had an associate's degree. Associate's degree, more prone unless you had a bachelor's degree. Mm-hmm. So, Lewis, really what we're trying to do is retool our society here in the state of Indiana to say we've weathered a really bad storm. A lot of people suffered greatly through that recession. Let's retool ourselves and be prepared and prevent that from happening again. And the consistent theme through there is education. And so if we look at, if you have a bachelor's degree, your earning potential is $1 million more over your lifetime than if you have an associate's degree or high school diplomas, even worse. So it really becomes a mathematical formula. Yes. And what we also know is by the year 2018, it's projected that we'll have over 900,000 new jobs in our state.
Wow.
So that's exciting.
Yes, absolutely.
Over half of those jobs, though, will require certificates or bachelor's degrees. So that's why we're so passionate at WGU Indiana to reach as many people as we can, because we're like, this is, we are your solution. If you can work hard and commit to it, you can earn your bachelor's degree in 2 years. By the time those new jobs are coming of 2018, mm-hmm, you'll be ready. You will be retooled, reskilled, and recharged and ready for those new jobs. And so it's real, and it's real in individuals' lives that education becomes the game changer.
So as we move from a society and an economy focused on perhaps building things, especially here in Indiana, we're part of the mm-hmm Rust Belt, as it's mm-hmm called in popular culture, then we are now looking at service-based economy, right, and there's those specific skills that people need, and Western Governors University is there to help provide it.
That's right.
We want to talk a little bit about the people that Western Governors University serves.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many people that traditionally can't make it to college, whether they be or they have traditionally had less success in college.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're talking a lot about racial minorities, people who are in their first opportunity going to first one in their family going to school. There are a lot of people that traditionally, if you look at the statistics, end up having less success. And that's really, Western Governors seems to really embrace those people and help them get their degrees.
Yeah, if we had a virtual yearbook, it would really be the greatest yearbook you'd ever see, Lewis, because you would see people from all 92 counties of Indiana, because we're online, so we're reaching every corner of our state, as we should. So you'd see people from rural Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
One of my students has a farm, and he goes to school at night because he's got Wi-Fi and, you know, and goes to the library when the Wi-Fi at the farm breaks down. So you'd have in this virtual yearbook students that live in the smallest communities of Indiana to people that live in downtown, you know, Bloomington and Indianapolis and Fort Wayne and Evansville, our bigger cities. You'd see students that are their first generation to go to college. I don't know why that story just tugs on my heart in a special way, because it means people still believe that and understand that college is their path to success. First generation to go to college. We have a large minority base of students that are going to WGU Indiana. We have students that have been somewhat disenfranchised by traditional models because they don't learn the way the traditional model says you have to learn. And so they don't succeed in that model, but they succeed in our model. And so then you have people like you've mentioned, Lewis, that have said, boy, I've tried college and it didn't work for me. WGU Indiana is a new option and a new solution for them. At the same time, in this virtual yearbook, you have people like Ken Dilger, former Colts player and Super Bowl winner,
oh, yeah,
who's getting his MBA with WGU Indiana, or Sarah Fisher, the race car driver and team mm-hmm owner, getting her degree from WGU Indiana. Wow. And so our yearbook is just filled with every story is a terrific and an important story, but the headline of our yearbook is that it affords options, a new option to people, to adults that they never had before.
Absolutely. And affords is such an appropriate word as we start thinking about that it's $6,000 a year.
That's right.
$6,000 a semester? A year.
A year. Flat rate. So includes tuition. Includes textbooks.
Books. Includes it all.
That's
includes
right.
it all. That's $6,000 a year. $12,000 if you were able to accelerate and get your bachelor's degree in 2 years. But in that, we start looking at around the country.
Yeah.
And we see protests, as we mentioned before. We see people saying, you know, costs are going up not only at the school for tuition and for fees and things like that, but also if we even think here locally in Bloomington, costs of living are rising.
Right.
We're looking at, you know, now with parking, with perhaps a change in how a trash is picked up. These are local things we've talked about here recently. So living and perhaps moving to a place where the school is might become more expensive, while $6,000 is really impressive. Is there something that you would think that the nonprofit model, is that really something that really you're very attracted to about Western Governors because you're able to provide the service to a vast number of people at a relatively low cost?
I think that is exact. I mean, it is our nonprofit culture at WGU Indiana, and it's our commitment to our students. It's also it is also our commitment to a streamlined education and university that focuses on helping adults earn their degree. And so in fairness to our other wonderful universities in the state of Indiana, you know, I don't have a football team and a basketball team and a baseball team that we hope goes all the way, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't have dormitories. I don't have, WGU Indiana has a very, very clear focus and a commitment to not raising our tuition, because that's what our students need, and that's what we're committed to. It's possible we leverage technology in a way that allows us to keep our costs low, but at the end of the day, it's because we are a niche university focused on a specific adult population who needs accredited and quality degrees. They're not looking for sororities and fraternities at the age of 45.
Well, and you mentioned those adult learners that you mentioned so much. You've mentioned most of the people have been to college. They're here. Your average age are 37 years. What is it that specifically, as we come near, we're wrapping up, we're getting close to the end of the show here, what is it about the specific, the adult learners that WGU caters to so much? Is it just the streamlined, or are there other aspects of the education?
It's a few things. It's competency-based. Mm-hmm. Adults resonate with a university that respects the fact that they have prior knowledge and prior job experience. Mm-hmm. That's the most respectful thing you can do for an adult learner. So it's the competency-based. It's also the mentor support. Adults are busy, and they need a partner in their pursuit of education, and that's what we provide, somebody who's going to call you every week and help you pursue your education. So I think the fact that it's got the competency base, it's got the support system of a faculty member calling you every week, the flexibility. You know, you want to take a little time off over summer vacation with your kids, that's your call. You know, you do your schoolwork early, you do it late. We respect the adult and their busy life, and we built our university to meet their needs, not the reverse.
And at the end of the day, the employers are happy with the graduates that are churned out.
They keep asking for more.
They keep asking for more. And so we're thinking about WGU Indiana specifically, and there are a number of different distance learning opportunities, as well as other online universities. What makes WGU different than the others?
So WGU Indiana, if your listeners are pursuing or thinking about going back to college, and I hope they are, and they're looking at an online model, what WGU Indiana stands out because we're nonprofit, $6,000 a year, because we're mentor supported, and because of competency-based model allows adults to accelerate to completion. And so that is our space. We know it. We live in it every day, and we make We don't compromise. We're here to help people get their bachelor's or master's degree in an affordable, flexible way with a quality education. That's what WGU Indiana offers to your listeners, and I hope people will pursue it.
Okay. So when we are talking about WGU, Western Governors University, Indiana, and so they have those few things that they that you are offered, the four colleges, 52 degrees.
Right.
You can perhaps get your bachelor's degree in 2 years. What would you have to say as the chancellor to people out there that might be thinking about it, that might be on the edge? They might be considering it, but they haven't really bought in yet. What would you say to them?
I would say four words. You can do it. Adults are on the bubble, Lewis, because in their mind, they're considering going back to college, but they're on the bubble because it's been a long time since they've been in school. Mm-hmm. They haven't cracked a textbook in 20 years. They're not sure about online and how that all works with the computer online education. But I'm here to tell your listeners that they can do it. We have graduated 799 adults already from WGU Indiana. 3,300 people have enrolled. We have alums all over the state telling their story. Now is the time. And for the first time in our state of Indiana, adults have an option that is built for them.
And you're growing rapidly.
We are growing rapidly.
You said, what was the rate you mentioned?
Our first 2 years, we grew at 1,400%, which just shows there's this great need and mm-hmm. pent-up need and people that are right there. They're ready to go, and we're here to help them. And we continue to grow every year.
Yeah. Is financial aid available?
Financial aid, both federal and state aid is available.
Federal and state. So, and are there any private financial aid available through WGU? Do you offer private scholarships, or is it all generally the
federal?
We
do have scholarships. We have military spouse scholarships. We have the Go Further scholarships. We want people to go to our website. We just announced $100,000 in private scholarships at our university for people to pursue. So we encourage your listeners to go to our website and check out both the financial and state aid and then our scholarships also.
Okay. And that website one more time?
indiana.wgu.edu.
Okay. I'm Lewis Malone. I'm here with Allison Barber. You are an educator at heart. You have a bachelor's degree from Tennessee Temple University, is that correct?
Right.
And then your master's of education at Indiana University, a prior president of Sodenta, a communications and PR firm, previously an adjunct professor in the School of Continuing Studies at Georgetown University, and previously the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Internal Communications at the Department of Defense. I want to thank you for being here.
Thank you,
talking to us about Western Governors University. As we are looking at that competency-based education system, we're talking about people who have the skills, and they show up, and they are willing to continue to get that education piece. What should they be? You've already mentioned that they just need to do it. You just got to try.
And they need to commit 15 hours a week to study.
15 hours a week.
That's right. So our students typically spend 15 hours a week in coursework, our students who succeed.
Okay. Well, and that's something to think about because if you have three kids, it can be hard to find 15 hours a week.
But I have students. One of my recent graduates, she and her husband have 7 children.
Oh, whoa.
7 children, but she worked as a nurse, so she's working full-time. She and her husband are raising 7 children, but she needed her BSN to be keep her job at her hospital.
Mm-hmm.
She came to WGU Indiana, and every night she'd close down her, after dinner, she'd say, Mommy's going to college, and off she'd go to their bedroom with her laptop, earned her bachelor's degree in a year, and went right on to get her master's in nursing with WGU Indiana, and will graduate this October. So that's a mom with 7 kids working full time. I'm telling you, Lewis, your listeners can do it.
You can do it, and for the employers out there, if you see a degree that says WGU Indiana on it, then you have really got someone who's knocking it out of the park in a lot of different areas.
That's right.
Again, you're listening to Interchange here on WFHB. My name is Lewis Malone. I've been happy to be here for the hour. I'm with Allison Barber, the chancellor at WGU, Western Governors University, Indiana. Thank you for being with us. Thank you.
Thank you, Lewis.
The executive producer of Interchange and tonight's engineer is Allison Bektesh. Original theme music is by Jamil Effiam. Please stay tuned for The Jazz Menagerie here on WFHB.